You all hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah? Okay. Very good. Well, I didn't get an outline from Raphael this time. He said, go do what you want to do. That's what he told me. So, yay, exciting. For the next time, Wednesday, we're actually going to conclude everything that we've kind of been talking about through this quarter, and I'll have an outline for that, so we'll be back on task then. But for this morning, I wanted to continue with the theme of this quarter where we're talking about family, of course. I didn't want to deviate from that, talking about the roles of men and women and the roles of children, roles of parents, roles that we have in our marriages and such and such. So, but I want to go back kind of towards parenting and children. And one of the reasons why is because we're getting closer and closer to a time where some of our children are going to be participating in an event called Lads to Leaders. And I don't know if any of y'all have already heard a little bit about Lads to Leaders, not heard a little bit about Lads to Leaders, but their goal is to teach children how to do biblical things in biblical ways. That's their motto. They don't want to deviate from the Bible, but they want the children to know how to do things biblically and to do things biblically, to have the courage and to have the pride in the Christian walk to stand up for what's right and to do what's right. So I want to start in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, we're going to read verses 13 through 16. 13 through 16, Matthew chapter 5. And again, I like to have more of a discussion-style class than a lecture-style class. So if you have a comment or a question, please feel free to raise your hand and let it be known. Hopefully I'll have the answer. I studied for some time, but I may not have the answer. May have to come back to it another time. Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Here we have Jesus in his Sermon on the Mount, beginning in chapter 5 and goes through chapter 7. He started with the Beatitudes, and then he continues right after that with how we are to be an example in the world, right? We are to be the salt of the earth. We're supposed to keep the earth flavored. We are to keep the earth, just lost the word. Seasoned, yeah, that's a good one. But salt also keeps things from rotting. What is the word I'm looking for?
Preserved.
Thank you. Purity kept wanting to come to my head, and that wasn't it. I knew it started with a P. Preserved. And then, of course, a light. We are to light up the way for others. We are to not try to hide our Christianity from the world. It is not something that we should be ashamed of. It is not something that we should feel like we need to keep it within ourselves, because it's not. We are to be a light in the world, okay? So if we are to do this as Christians, then we need to do it with our homes, and we need to teach our children how to do the same thing when they're older. Or even now. They don't even have to be older. They can do it right now. They can do what's right now, no matter what age. So going back to the Lads to Leaders, that is what we are striving to do, is to give our children the courage and the knowledge to be able to be that light in the world. So I want to get off Lads to Leaders. I want to talk more about what we're going to, our Bible class. But that's why I chose to go back to the children, because it has become, it's a very serious, scary thing to think that children are going to leave the church when they're able to, when they're not under mom and dad's thumb, you know. So let's continue on. We're going to look at a lot of passages here, a lot of them. And so I'm going to ask for different people to read each one. But each one, we'll talk about them after we've read nearly all of them. Romans chapter 6, verse 23. Romans chapter 6, verse 23. Whoever has it can read it.
The wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Jesus Christ our Lord.
Okay. Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. All right, John chapter 3, verse 16 through 18. John chapter 3, verse 16 through 18.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but should have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God.
Romans chapter 6, verse 23. Romans chapter 6, verse 23. Nope. We just read that one. I'm sorry, I duplicated that one, but thank you. Emphasis. That's what that was. That was emphasis. Revelation chapter 20, verse 15. Revelation chapter 20, verse 15. We're going to flip around quite a bit, and it's for emphasis. This is all for emphasis.
And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire.
Matthew chapter 25, verse 46. I just want you to know I only chose about a third of what I found to read. A third. Matthew chapter 25, verse 46.
And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal.
Thank you. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28.
Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy body, soul, and body in hell.
All right. Mark chapter 9, verses 43 through 48. Matthew chapter 9, verses 43 through 48. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter into life maimed rather than having two hands to go to hell into the fire that shall never be quenched. There, worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. And if your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life lame rather than having 2 feet and to be cast into hell, into the fire that shall never be quenched, where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. And if your eyes cause you to sin, pluck it out. It is better for you to enter into the kingdom of heaven with one eye rather than having 2 eyes to be cast into the hell fire, where the worm does not die and the fire is never quenched. I believe 3 times he said that it was fiery and there were worms that would not die. And the fire will not be quenched. Just in that one passage. Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13, verses 50, or verse number 50. Actually, start in verse 49, please, and read verse 50.
So it will be at the end of the age, the angels will come forth, separate the wicked from among the just, and cast them into the furnace of fire. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Revelation 20, verse 10. Revelation 20, verse 10.
The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophets are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever.
Okay. We have just a few more. Don't worry. We're getting to the end of them. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 9. Second Thessalonians chapter 1 verse 9.
Who shall be punished with everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power?
Revelation chapter 20 verse 14. Revelation chapter 20 verse 14. Matthew chapter 5 verse 22.
And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying,
Matthew chapter 5 verse 22.
But I say unto you that whoever is angry against his brother without cause shall be liable to the judgment. Whosoever calls his brother a rascal shall be liable to the council. Whosoever shall say you fool shall be liable to hell fire.
All right. And then finally, Revelation 14, verse 11. Revelation 14, verse 11. All these passages do not, or they depict a terrible, horrible place called hell, right? Every single one of them. And this is just, like I said, probably a third of what I came across. I've heard many say, and I know that it's true, that Jesus spoke more about hell than about heaven. I don't know the number. At one time we went through in a Bible class and counted all of them. But I don't have it written down. I should have. So, hell is very real. Hell is very scary. The thought of hell. It does not end. It's not like the tribulations and trials that we face on earth where eventually they'll end. You know, the tortures that people have gone through physically with their bodies, it goes away eventually. You know, but hell doesn't. If you're there, you're there. End of story. As I tell my kids all the time. End of story, period. That's it. And as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, if we don't have kids, we got to make sure that our children are prepared when they leave our homes so that they can stand up for what's right and remain in the church and be a faithful Christian. These are things that maybe Raphael hinted at while he was doing his classes on the roles of children and the roles of parenting and that kind of thing. But he leaned more towards it keeps them, some of the parenting that we do keeps them safe on this world. But let's keep them safe for all eternity. He hinted at it several times. Yes, sir. Did you raise your hand? Oh, okay. That's too bad. This is something that when I was doing this study, I was jumping all over the place. I was everywhere, so I apologize. There's not, my format may not seem as fluid as other people's formats, but that's because I could not stop thinking about these things. And I hope that these are things that you can't stop thinking about as parents and grandparents. Not only because you have to take care of yourself, but you have the responsibility as soon as you become a parent to take care of somebody else. And we need to make sure that we're raising children that could one day become preachers, teachers, elders, elders' wives, deacons and deacons' wives. We turn over to, getting a little bit ahead of myself, but 2 Timothy chapter 3, not 2 Timothy chapter 3. Yes.
They know this, but we miss out on with our children more than anything is respect for us and for authority in particular, and God especially.
Yes.
They come in and they run all over this building. This building is a place of worship. It's not a playground. And I'm afraid we're losing a lot of our control of our children when they're babies.
Yes. I agree. My children are just as guilty as other children in playing too much in this building. They are children, however. We need to remember that they're children. And that even Jesus is very fascinated with children. But you're right. They lack a respect for authority from a very early age. And just like we respect the authority of God, it started with fear. In all honesty, a very basic principle is fear. As we become more mature, we respect God because we see His love for us. But initially, it starts with fear because of the passages we just read, right? We fear going to hell. But eventually, as you mature, and just like as a child matures, they see that the disciplines that we go to are not because we want them to be fearful of us forever. It's because we want them to have a respect for authority, a respect for God, and a respect for what's in this book. To keep them safe, but to keep them safer for all eternity. Yes, ma'am.
I would also add that we need to be very clear that the kids realize that the church is the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the building. And when we teach them that respect, it's respecting the people.
Yes.
Respect the building, respect everybody's stuff, but making it very clear that the church is the people.
Yes, we're to be good stewards of the physical things that we have, but the church is the people. Yep. And so, yes, very good point. Just to show you how all over the place I was, I have notes here and I have notes here. Got to go back and forth a little bit. 1 Timothy chapter 3, not 2 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3. I just want to read verse 1 first. This is a faithful saying: if a man desires the position of a bishop or an elder, he desires a good work. Okay? What I'm trying to say here is we want our children to want to be good workers. So to desire and to be qualified for a position of eldership is a great thing. Not everyone can do it. Not everyone has that desire either. But we want to try to raise our children that this is a goal for them, perhaps. Right? Or to be a minister. That's not an easy life. Being an elder, that the responsibilities that an elder has, they have to answer for the whole congregation. They have to love each one of us, even when we're frustrating them. That's a command. That's in the Bible for them to take care of us and to shepherd us.
I've seen it a lot of times, for our church, big spring, years. The elders were doing the deacon's jobs.
The elders were doing the deacon's jobs?
Yes. Overseeing the church. The deacons do something.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah, they're the workers.
That's right. Yeah. There's a reason why there's a distinction between the two, right? Just like there's a distinction between man and woman and the roles that each one has. God didn't accidentally form the church. There's purpose behind it, and there's lots of thought. He knew what He was doing. All right. According to these passages that we just read, a person who is not a faithful member of the church will go to hell, no matter how much we love them and know they are a quote-unquote good person, right? We all know quote-unquote good people. God is the definer of good, not man. So we need to be good in God's eyes, not our own eyes, and not in someone else's eyes. And like I said, as I was reading this, it started to kill me that my children could be sent to such a terrible place. And I have to do everything that I can do to make sure they're prepared. And that's what I want to talk about in this class today, is trying to prepare our children, looking at examples in the Bible. I have several examples here of faithful people and the characteristics that they have that we need to try to bestow in our children as high priority. High priority stuff. But as we're going through these examples, I want every one of us to think about how many children we know have left the church. They got out from underneath mom and dad. There was no one to force them, you could say, to go. How many, maybe right here in this congregation, how many have left the faith entirely, and how many have just joined another denomination, which is leaving the faith entirely in my book. There's only one faith. If you're not in that one faith, then you've left the faith. Doesn't matter what you have on your church building sign. So, for those of you who have witnessed this within our families, I have some in my family. Why did this happen? I know the ones that are in my family why it happened. The parents who were raised in the church were permissive to every little detail that their children did. They're just permissive. They just didn't, it's like they didn't want to be their parent anymore. Wanted to be their friend. That's my example. There are other examples. My family originated in Lorraine with a farmer and his wife. And they had 11 children. And those 11 children were all raised in the church. And every time we had a family reunion, still to this day, we have worship service at our family reunions. Those 11 were my great-grandparents and great-great-aunts and uncles. Okay? There are 11 of them. And as time has gone and those people have died, their children aren't as faithful to try to uphold the worship service at our family reunions. And their children definitely aren't. They're the ones that are still, they're packing up, getting ready to leave while we're all worshiping on Sunday morning. And the parents that do come, I guess the offspring of these original 11, yes, sir.
Yeah, several years ago, a lady came back that was here a long time ago, and she'd been gone for 23 years and hadn't attended church. So there's always a hope.
Oh.
Hope there.
Yes, sir, there is. There's always hope.
23 years.
Yeah. As long as we still have breath in our bodies, there's hope. But of those original 11's children, they've gotten streaky on coming, so their kids aren't coming to the worship service that we have, and I know they're not worshiping anywhere else. You just know they're not by their actions. And it's because no one wants to hurt anybody's feelings anymore. America is the most sensitive nation in the whole world, I think. We can't hurt anybody's feelings in America. It's a sad deal. How many times did Jesus hurt people's feelings? Called people hypocrites. Man, that's a dirty word right there, hypocrites. That's attacking someone within themselves. It's a bad deal. Another question that we need to think about, did they have the knowledge to stand up for the truth? Maybe that's what it is. Maybe they don't know how to stand up for the truth. So they cave to their peers. Were they taught to be brave and courageous, for God is with them? Were they taught to search the scriptures, to check, to make sure that the things that are being taught from the pulpit are correct? Were they taught to be proud of the church? You know, we've talked about pride several times. A haughty spirit comes before a fall. That type of pride is not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about you're willing to show the sword of truth to those who are around you. Be that light. Be proud of it. Were they taught to be a leader in the church? So, what are common characteristics of leaders?
Endurance.
Yeah.
Hard workers.
Hard workers, yeah. Yes, sir.
You know, on this discussion, I'm thinking of the example of Hannah. her oath to God, mm-hmm. Samuel, mm-hmm. And placing Samuel under Eli. As parents, you know, we have to exhibit a
a bond within the church. And those leaders within the church, we have to have our children as well under those leaders as well. We do it at home, but we also have to have the leaders in the church be a part of that growth for our children as well. And as far as leaders, I think of examples of Paul and Timothy, and how although his mother and grandmother brought him up in the knowledge of God, and though his father, we don't know, was not involved, but yet Timothy, through his mother and grandmother, had some knowledge of God then placed under the wing of Paul. See, that's important also.
Oh, yeah.
The structure of the church family.
Yep. That's very true. So true. In fact, we're going to touch on Timothy a little bit later on. Glad you brought that up. Thank you. Yep. I purposely sometimes send my kiddos over to Dennis. I'm not going to lie. Because he's an elder in the church, and they need to know that they can go to Dennis at any time. You know, I send them over to Rick. I send them over to Don on purpose. I tell them to go over there just so that they can be around men that have taken on that leadership role to take care of the church. I send them to women, too. And I do that on purpose, and part of it is because I'm tired and to go. Not really. That's not it at all. I'm just wanted someone to smile. but the real reason is to be comfortable within our congregation. That's an important thing. My grandfather was an elder, and he loved children. Those are the minds that are willing to listen, I think, more than adults. And he loved being around them. Still does. And so he's not an elder in the church anymore. He stepped down because of health issues. But that's important to make sure that our children are comfortable around the leadership in the congregation, whether it's a positional leadership or maybe the Sunday school teachers. It's very important. Thank you, sir.
We have a watch wherever we go, whatever we say, and we have to be sure that we are setting a good example. Like a while ago when I was talking before church, I had shut up because my tongue wasn't with my brain.
The tongue is a hard thing to control. In fact, one of the passages talking about the hellfire and everything that I omitted was one about the tongue. Not on purpose, because I didn't want to, not because I was trying to dodge that one, but just because I had so many already. That was the one that I just stopped at and, for you know, deleted the rest. Let's look at some key passages on parenting and examples of good leaders. Let's look at Ephesians 4, verse 6. Ephesians 4, verse 6.
One God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all.
I wrote down the wrong verse on that one. Thank you for reading that, but that's not the verse I was looking for. Well, maybe I'll find it. Let's go on to the other one because I can't find it. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Thank you.
Are you looking for Ephesians 6, 4?
Yes, I probably just... Yep. Yes, will someone read that, please? Ephesians 6, 4.
And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord.
Thank you. Thank you. We are told to guide our children and teach them the word, right? Let's continue on. And let's look at Timothy, the example we have in Timothy from 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17.
Let
For this reason, I have sent Timothy to you, who is my beloved and faithful son in the Lord, who will remind you of the ways of my ways in Christ, as I teach everywhere in every church.
Okay. And then let's look at chapter 16 of 1 Corinthians, verse 10. And if Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord, as I also do. So here we see, let's just keep going. Let's keep reading a little bit more. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 14. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 14. But you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from your childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus. So how did he learn them from his youth? Well, if you look in chapter 1, verse 5 of the same book, when I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is also in you. So, we see here a man that is willing to work, a young man, because we know he's young because of 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, let no one despise your youth, but be an example in, to the believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and in purity. We know that he's a younger man. Now, so he is already looked at as someone that may be immature or coming to these congregations where he's trying to preach. And he's told to be strong. Don't let them despise your youth. Don't let them use that against you. Be strong, person. Because why? Because he's a worker. And we see that in these passages. He's a worker, and the work that he does comes from a knowledge. Okay, so characteristics of leaders. They have to have knowledge, have to be a worker, right? Has to be brave. Not let people push us around. Paul told them, don't let them despise you. Don't let them do it. Okay, let's look at Joseph, the example of Joseph that we have in Genesis chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39. Going to begin. Someone read verses 2 through 4 of Genesis chapter 39.
The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority.
Thank you. So, if you're going to prosper at everything that you do, what does that imply? That you're doing something, right? You're working. So here's another example of hard work. But also in this same passage is the example of servanthood. Okay? I've been told there's a difference between a manager and a leader. A manager bosses people around and a leader leads them where to go. Right? So if that manager or boss is not willing to get into the trenches and help when it's needed, he's not being a leader, he's just being a boss. We want leaders out of our children, not bosses, not someone that's just going to hold a position and point their finger and expect everybody else to do what they're not willing to do, right?
Chad?
Yes.
And this is just a general, I guess, statement and question at the same time, in the sense of raising godly children. I think the hardest thing is really 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 of teaching our children not to love the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes the hard part of balancing being in the world and yet not being of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in essence, I think a lot of times we lose our children to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we have acclimated ourselves to the customs of the world to the point that we expose our children to things sooner than they're ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
The world teaches us that a child is an adult at the age of 18. They're not an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we've been acclimated to because of the society in which we live in. And so how do we balance the exposure to the world, to our children, at such younger and younger ages to where they're not ready for the world and all of its temptations and its devices and all of the things that it has, but yet keep them apart from that without looking as if we are and being told that we're suffocating our children.
Helicopter parents.
They say that, you know, you're not exposing your children to this. You're over being a little bit overbearing to mm-hmm. them. But if we were to really follow what the Bible teaches about that, you know, even an example I'm thinking of, and this is part of the question, is daughters. Daughters are under the headship of their fathers until they get married. That's the whole point of a father giving their daughter away at the marriage. Mm-hmm. But we don't really in our society see daughters being at home with their under their headship of their father until they get married. When they turn 18, they're out there on their own. Mm-hmm. They're considered an adult. And mm-hmm. so, you know, women are, who's their head? Who's their leader when they're single?
Right.
We don't teach that. We don't promote that. We are more acclimated to the customs of the world than we are really the customs in which that Bible teaches us to do. And then we wonder, why are we losing our children? We're losing them because we're not really doing or following examples that the Bible teaches because it's countercultural.
Right.
And we're more wanting to be mixed in or blended in with the culture than we are with biblical teaching.
Right.
How do we balance that?
I don't know that I'm as equipped as some to be able to answer that because I have young children. It's very easy for me to say, no, you're not watching TV. No, you... Kipton doesn't know that a video game console exists. He has no idea that it exists. He's never seen one, and we tend to keep it that way for as long as we can. For reasons that are within our own reasoning and others which I can point to in the Bible, you know. But, we are to be a set apart nation, right? We're not supposed to look like the rest of the world. And to try to, but like you said, we are to be in the world, but not of the world. So we cannot get away from the world. It is there. We're not to be monks. We're not told to go live somewhere on a hill and never have human contact besides with the church that's already with us. You know, we're told to go out into the world. So the balancing doesn't need to be a balance. It needs to be heavier, I believe, in the Christian culture. Christianity is a culture within itself. It breaks all bonds of nationality. It breaks all bonds of race. It breaks all bonds of everything. Every culture can be a Christian, okay? But Christianity can't be every culture, right? It's like the rectangle and the square. You know, a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square, okay? We have to mimic what's here before we try to mimic what's out there. And by mimicking what's in here, there's going to be some overlap where we're right in line with society, with our culture and society, because it's right in line with Christ. But anywhere that it deviates from Christianity, I don't think there is a balancing act. I think it has to be heavy in Christianity, and that's hard. That's where it gets really difficult, is where the two don't intertwine. Yes, ma'am.
I will say, too, that you don't give in to, I mean, just because every other third grader has a cell phone, third graders have no need, physical need for a cell phone.
You're right. Yeah.
There are certain things that we've got to teach our children the difference between the needs and the wants.
Yep.
And it may mean they're the only one in their class that doesn't have the cell phone.
Yeah.
But yeah. Telling them, okay, this is why you don't have the cell phone. Why arm our children with something that could possibly send them to hell
right. When
they're so young and they're not mentally ready for it?
Yep.
They're not ready to handle that responsibility. We have to be careful as parents not to just give in to make sure our kids have the latest of what they want.
Right. Yep.
And that's easy at third grade.
Yeah, it's a lot harder as they get older. That's why I'm saying I may not be the best one to answer this question because I have not lived that part of my life yet. And it's easy for me to go into this as much as possible, but I can't understand within myself what others who have older children go through. And maybe I'm not the best one for that. But what I can do is just say that that it is obvious and apparent in the Word that we are to be separate. We are supposed to be a peculiar nation, I believe is the King James quote there. And by peculiar, we're going to be ridiculed. We're going to be the ones that don't fit in. We're going to be the triangle that doesn't fit in that square hole, right? And that's okay. That's what God wants. But He doesn't want us to stop beating our head against that square hole to bring others to be triangles, you know? Very good question. I'm sorry. I don't know if I answered it or if I just created more thoughts, but, maybe there was a little guidance in there.
If we can encourage them to be leaders instead of followers, that helps.
Yes.
It doesn't cure the problem, but it helps.
Right, right. You're very, very.
Always need to remember, the devil's a roaring lion.
Yeah, he is.
And he's got traps set everywhere for you. Don't get in them. If you do, you better get out.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
Drink
and cry. Yep. Let's look at a bad example real quick of leadership gone wrong. Here is a man that was a leader, but he did it entirely wrong. And he was the son of who we call the wisest man next to Jesus to walk the earth, right? Rehoboam. Let's turn over to 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter... So we can raise our kids to be leaders, and they can lead the wrong way. That's why it's important for us to know what's in the Bible. I know we were looking at Joseph just a little bit ago, but we have 1 minute left, and I really want to hit on Rehoboam. So 1 Kings chapter 12... 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 1 through 15, tells the story of how Rehoboam came into kingship and some people come to him. Let's look at let's just start in verse 1. Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So it happened when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard it. He was still in Egypt, for he had fled from the presence of King Solomon, had been dwelling in Egypt, that they sent and called him. Then Jeroboam and the whole assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." So he said to them, "Depart from me for 3 days, then come back to me." And the people departed. The king Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived and said, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" And they spoke to him, saying, "If you will be a servant to these people today," see, servanthood, "and serve them and answer them and speak good things to them, then they will be your servants forever." But he rejected the advice which the elders had given him and consulted the young men who he had grown up with who stood before him. And he said to them, "What advice do you give? How should we answer these people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?" Then the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, "Thus you should speak to the people who have spoken to you, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us.' Thus you shall say to them, 'My little fingers shall be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges.'" So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam on the third day, as the king had directed, saying, "Come back to me the third day." Then the king answered the people roughly and rejected the advice which his elders had given him. Let's see what the consequence of this is. Let's skip down to verse 19 and verse 20. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. Now it came to pass when all Israel heard that Jeroboam had come back, they sent for him and called him to the congregation and made him king over all Israel. There was none followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah only. So because of his actions, because of his lack of wanting to be a servant type leader, they rebelled and they divided. The kingdom never came back together again. The kingdom of Israel was done. Okay, so that was a bad leader. Sorry, I read that really fast, but we're out of time. Thank you for your attention. I have more if you want to look into Joseph and his story. We can see that he was a moral man when he ran away from Potiphar's wife. He was trustworthy. He was honest. He had patience in his trusting of God. He let God do it on his own time. He didn't try to do it himself when he was stuck in prison. And he gives credit to God every time he gave a prophecy, or not a prophecy, but a interpretation of the dreams. And he was forgiving. We see at the very end of his own family that tried to kill him and sold him into slavery and everything. So good characteristics of leaders. And I hope that this class was beneficial. Thank you for your time.